Greetings. This is Amy Suzara here on the poetry segment on Setting the Standard, KPFA 94.1. October is Filipino American History Month, celebrating and honoring the contributions of people of descent from the 7,000 islands of the Philippine archipelago. Our history in the United States is recorded as early as 1587 when Spanish ships stopped by Morro Bay in California, and the first permanent settlements traced to Louisiana in 1763 with Manila galleon men who jumped ship and swam to shore. And Filipino Americans are recorded as the second largest group of Asian Americans at around 4 million, according to the last census. So today we'll have several guests I'll be speaking with who identify with Filipino as Filipino American, at least in part, around their poetry as well as other literary contributions that they're making. We've got writers who cross the boundaries of poetry, prose, and education, and they're also leaders in the community of various ages and generations. I'm really excited to have in the studio right now David Maduli.
What's up?
Hey, David. David is a writer, veteran public school teacher, active DJ, and father. He was born in San Francisco and raised all over, and he's a longtime resident of Oakland and a winner of the 2011 Joy Harjo Poetry Prize. It's really great to have you in the studio, David. Yeah, no problem. So I'm just posing the really basic question to my guests tonight because, you know, the identity piece in a lot of our poems comes through either very overtly and sometimes more subtly. And I'm really familiar with your work since we've worked together and taken workshops together and shared work. And I'm wanting to ask you for the purpose of our theme, how does identity as Filipino American play in your poetry?
Yeah, definitely. So basically, identity for me is, or Filipino American identity, what it means is that I carry around, not just in my head, the stories of my parents and grandparents and lolos, but I also carry them in my body, like in my bones, in my blood. And it's not just the words that I've been told, but also the stories that I don't know about and the stories that I'm trying to find out about, like trying to piece together what happened. For example, both of my grandfathers were survivors of the Bataan Death March, but they didn't really talk about it. And the little bit that I know from them and from other family members, you know, the rest I have to put together. And so that's part of what I write about and what comes out in the stories that I write and the poems that I write.
So, David, from what you're saying about researching your ancestry and how that goes into the content of your piece, you're speaking across generations. And I know that you're also a teacher and educator, mm-hmm. As well as a DJ. And I think that there's something there about how you're speaking across and through generations with your work. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I'm also a father. And so definitely when I speak about these things or find out about these things, it's for my daughter as well, you know, for her to understand who she is, who we are, who our family is, and so that she can develop her own questions about who we are, what happened, you know, and whether it matters or what matters about it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, absolutely with my own students in the classroom, just getting them to understand and look at their own histories and look at their own families, mm-hmm. and what that means to them.
Great.
And then as a DJ, you know, a lot of what we do is we dig, we go into the past, we go into different genres and styles and try to find the, you know, the little pieces of gold in there, mm-hmm. you know, to share with everyone. So it all comes together. It's all part of the same thing.
Yes, yes. There's a lot of sort of all of those different types of communication you're mentioning in your poems. And so I would love to hear you go ahead and share some of your work and tell us what you're sharing.
Yeah, sure. This one, this first one I'll share is called Fade. And it's about the first time that I and my family traveled back to the Philippines. I was born here, so this describes kind of like the first hour that we were there. So, fade. My people ride shotgun. Kuya Jerome wrestles Toyota wheel through Manila gut swamped. Yesterday's typhoon rests curb level. My people polished on billboards, dozens deep in jeepneys, roots beneath flood water, smiles above street din. My people, first time this soil, ride Kuya's airport shuttle, sling windows down, sing dawn together. With my people we pass. All of us breathe home. Bending crowded corner, we sideswipe squatter. Her face slows past mine, eyes monsoon, her voice Pinatubo's blood. Won't glance back. Jerome keeps rolling on right turn. We fade into diesel smog. My people, my people, my people.
Beautiful, beautiful. So tell me about the inspiration for that particular piece.
Yeah, this one, you know, basically it's my first time traveling to the Philippines, you know, not my first time traveling to another country, but my first time experiencing being in a country that is foreign to me, at least, but it feels like home. And so here I am riding from the airport and just kind of like romanticizing everything that I'm seeing and, you know, just being amazed and in wonder. And then boom, we hit this woman, you know. And it's just one of those moments where I realize, you know, things are not all what they seem, you know, or things are not, that things are much more complicated than, you know, this like, I romanticized idea of like a prodigal homecoming or something, you know, and just really seeing for the first time what my people are living like.
So great. So I would love to hear, I think we have time for one more piece.
Yeah, sure.
And so go ahead, and is this going to be Santa Ana Skyscrapers?
That's right.
All right.
All right, here it is. Brandishing sawed-off laser rifles, two Mojave winds step through the glass sliding doors. Throw your hands in the air, grab for the sky. The pretty dragon at the counter sneers, you can't save them all. Behind mirror glass, Aurora Borealis, her hair tied in shadow, reroutes the security feed to a safe house two skies west, where Diwata beholds the grainy image flung on the drab clouds. The masked figures fill tent-sized canvas bags with untold treasures, slivers of fourth-quarter moon. For 13-year-old Michaela, eyes ecstasy red, climbing in pickup's cab with two strange men. Bolts of purple lightning caught from Colorado thunderheads for little Elias huddled under covers, mom and dad hurling doors at each other next room. Ingots of gold forever for Adriana, duct tape hugging plastic explosives to her belly, slung backseat through the checkpoint. A sun rays memories for Lathan, convulsing in the Mesopotamian dust, army battle dress speckled with shrapnel and waterfalls. For the family in all prisons, all deserts. The Santa Ana swift out the vault, kick off the cloud bank, ripcord into blue. Bandanas wrap nose and mouth, two scars fluttering, dandelion dust. Diwata watches the bright parachutes fade to pinpoints, raises the roof, whoops it up, freaks a funky end zone dance, and laughs and laughs and laughs till her stomach aches and tears shine. Burlap shelters her from the ozone and the floor's stone spine. Diwata yawns her temple onto her forearm for a pillow. She finds her soulmate in her dreams that night, glowing softly in her cell.
Wow, powerful, powerful. tell us just a little bit about the inspiration for this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this comes a lot just from seeing and processing and trying to understand all of the tragic and horrible things that are going on around us in our own communities, in other countries that we're connected with or have solidarity with, and just for young people in general and girls, and just trying to understand and figure that all out. And so it's kind of, it comes from this idea of what I've heard called dream work intervention, which is kind of like what could have happened or what I would want to do, like maybe if I was a superhero or something. Hmm. So it comes a little bit out of trying to understand those things, but trying to place them in, you know, in the world in some way that makes sense.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing work you're doing there. So tell us a little bit about any projects you're working on right now. I think you mentioned a collaboration, and so
yeah,
something we can
sure.
keep an eye out for.
For sure. So the Santa Ana Skyscrapers, that poem is going to be coming out in a book called Cuento for Lost Things that's edited by Melissa Cipin and Rachel Cruz. Mm-hmm. And it's an anthology of Philippine myth. And my partner, Hari Malagayo Aluri, out from Vancouver, we actually submitted another poem to that same anthology that we co-wrote, and we kind of developed this process of collaborating and working together, you know, using technology, using the phone, using Google Docs and things like that. And so we did a truly collaborative piece. You know, I couldn't say which lines are mine and which lines are his. You know, it's really been kind of like crafted and blended together. But so that was the first piece we did together. And then we're, you know, developing that and growing that into a whole project, a whole book
awesome.
Of collaborative poems.
Cool, yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much, David. Is there anything else you want to leave us with right now? I mean, in terms of any places to check you out or just keep an eye out for that book?
Yeah, just keep an eye out for that. And thanks for having me.
All right. It's great to have you. Thank you, David. So this has been Amy Suzara with the poetry segment on Setting the Standard, KPFA 94.1. Let's turn it back to some music from Pedro Reyes.